to be advised and helped by the older ones.
Yeah.
You see, nowadays, you know, it has to be done much more diplomatically. I mean, what I find nowadays they do is to put us all on the shelf, so to speak. And then a year or two later, sort of say, well, I think it'd be quite good to have a little help and advice. And we come back.
You have to come in rather
and,
discreetly.
I mean, I retired from WBS officially in 1973 because we had a sort of agreement then that top people should retire at 65 if they were holding jobs of responsibility, and I was more than that. I've never stopped working because I find I'm, you know, so far, I'm of some use because I'm a spare wheel that can be called in.
Yeah.
And,
it's nice that way because you don't have the dilemma of when to resign because you have resigned.
Yes, and you don't also have the responsibility. And the new people come along. I had an experience of it this afternoon where the new top administrative person said, oh, I want your advice on something. Well, then he expounded what he was going to do. And I mean, you have to be terribly tactful because it was exactly what we did for 10 or 15 years ago. Mm. But he's an ex-army man and he was putting it in much more sort of professional terms and professional ways.
How did your bosses, so to speak, in the NSWS advise you? I mean, you had a representative on the council, didn't you?
Yes, well, we had the executive committee, you see, and then there was a representative of the junior council on the executive committee, and then we had our own executive committee, and now, what date is that? That's 34, annual general meeting.
Mm.
Well, that's of course, I was wondering if we had the junior council annual general
So in fact, you had a direct line, so to speak.
Yes, we had a direct line, and if you know what I I wonder what year that is. That was one of the things I was thinking of. The annual meeting. So that's 39. It's rather later, but still, that's when I was secretary of the junior council.
Yes. So in fact, there was a formal representation, but you would say that in your personal dealings with the people who ran it, you'd be much more deferential in those days than young people would be now.
Yes, I think so. Well, I think that in those days we would conform to the pure constitutional methods by which we would make a report of what we were doing. I don't think anybody ever said you mustn't do that or you can't do that because everything we were doing was, you know, in line with the aims and objects of the society, and we did a lot of fun. Of course, another thing we got to realise is that a lot of our work was really fundraising too.
For the NSWS.
Yes. And we had a market once a year where we got £400 or £500, which was a lot in those days. In this big hall, and then we had a dramatic society and a debating society and a political society, and then of course we had two rooms that we let and a little restaurant too, so it was quite a little centre. And as one would imagine and expect, the junior council became the operational live part, and the others were more advisers who dealt with the more the political work.
In fact, you in the Second World War, you actually amalgamated.
Then we merged, yes. I mean, we came back to merging. By that time, we'd all got experience. And I suppose it was after Ray Strachey's death, too, that...
What sort of part did she play, actually, in the whole thing?
Well, she was the organising secretary, you see. It was her job to organise everything. And she would organise petitions to Parliament or anything of that sort. And she was very much the draft... Well, of course, Pippa was the... drafter. She was the most wonderful drafting person. Some of the fascinating things that she's drafted. And I got out a lot there because I had to do a big bit of research over the weekend over something to do with the trust. And the things that she drafted, when the death duties on the plague in 1926, you see, and she would go bullied them in then revenue and said, well, it's ridiculous that we should have to pay death duties on this, you see. And she got them all sort of reduced and everything. It's wonderful. correspondence that she used to have with the lawyers and people.
Did you actually, you met her?
Yes. Oh, right up. Well, of course, she was right through, and she was secretary, you see. I mean, the last time I saw her was when she was down in Putney in a nursing home when she went blind. Now, Mary Stocks, of course, have you talked to her at all?
Yes, I did, yes.
Because she knows a lot, of course, about that period, although she wasn't so much one of us, but she does it.
Yes.
But, of course, she was a great friend of Pippa's, and she tried very hard, but she didn't really succeed. And that's what, it's such a pity, to get a recording of Pippa's reminiscences of the whole strait
nice.
He set up. But she went down two or three times, but I think that she did it too late. I think that Pippa had, got past.
Yes, my impression is that Pippa's really rather a key person, though you'd never guess it from looking at what happens in public, in a way. I mean,
well, she is. There's no doubt about that, I think.
I think it's her
wisdom, you know. She was and the fact that people did respect her judgment. And, I mean, she had certain of the straighty ability, general writing and that sort of thing. But I think successive governments and people have always felt the force of society would take a middle route, a middle way, and that they would be trusted to send in memoranda that were really sort of thought out things. They didn't always win, I mean, they didn't always agree with them. And I think that tradition, which may be dying now, I don't know, but was certainly generated by Pippa, and her power of drafting and... she was a wonderful person on a deputation.
Was she really?
She got to the point. Mm. And she got a sense of humour. And, she...
She could present a case.
She could present a case. Mm. She was rather slow, even in her early days, what I call slow in coming forth. I worked once with Lord Simon when he was Foreign Secretary, really. And he was the same sort of mind. It was terribly slow. He'd walk up and down like a barrister does, but he'd have his perfect thing. If he dictated anything to anybody or anything, he'd have it completely thought out in his mind before he said it. Mm. Well, I mean, nowadays people just don't.
Yes.
I mean, even the most able people, they're much more apt to.
But she's not a sort of flamboyant person.
No.
In any sense.
Oh, no.
She doesn't show herself in public much.
No.
Does she?
No.
That's not quite.
Have you seen that little pamphlet about?
Yes, I think Mary Scott wrote it, didn't she? Or am I wrong?
Mary, yes, I think she did.
I believe she did.
Memoir. It's a very good one. I picked up another copy of it the other day, and I was in there.
What did she look like after this
happened?
Did she look impressive at all?
No. She had very, very. Starting eyes. You ought to see that photograph, that painting, that's in the office.
The Bloomsbury Group photograph, painting, you mean?
Wait a minute, it's on that. Isn't the photograph on the on this? Isn't it in this? Yes, that's it. That's the one.
And
I
you think that's right?
That's
do you? I mean,
one.
That's got her all right. I mean.
Oh well, yes, you know. I mean, it's near enough to show to show the type of person.
Yes, I mean, a lot of people say to me that one of her strengths was that she was very good at listening to people.
Mm.
And
oh yes,
she'd
would.
Become the confidant of quite a lot of people.
I think she would.
Because she showed an interest in what
they
said.
Yes, she would. I mean, she certainly would.
Was she sort of strategist behind the
election? Oh, yes,
would you say?
Yes. Oh, I think she certainly was that. I think that some of the older, the more older generation would probably give a better picture as to her contribution vis-a-vis Ray Strachey.
Mm.
Because Ray Strachey was rather a more flamboyant thought. She was a
was
big,
she?
Broad woman.
Yes.
And much more flamboyant in as much as she was an orator, and she's a good speaker and that.
On good terms with Pippa, presumably.
Worked very well together.
Yes. So, does Ray actually have a specific function in relation to the Junior Council, or is she just a prominent person?
Well, I would say that she was the... is her name down on that as an organising secretary of it? Is her name on the front, perhaps? I remember her as being the office, the person who ran the office. I mean, we were all ornery, sort of doing it in our spare time.
Yes.
But the machinery behind it worked because it was an office. And Ray Strachey was most definitely the liaison between the executive of committee of the society and the junior council during its early years. Mm.
Could you tell me how you actually came to join the junior council? How did it happen?
Do you know, I just can't remember that. I don't know. I seem to find myself there. I have an idea that I did it. I was trained at Mrs. Hoster's, did a secretarial training. There was somebody I met there, and I have a sort of feeling that she probably told me about this. And I was working on the Encyclopaedia Britannica in the very first... 26, 27. I don't think I joined the junior council till 29. But I think that I must have been introduced by somebody, and it was just the sort of thing I needed and wanted, you see. And I was living at home, and I was very interested in girl guides. I was spending a lot of time on that, and I wanted something else that brought one in touch with the things that were going on. And then there seemed to be a group of people that I knew and met there. And Lady Astor used to have awfully... She was a very interesting person in as much, quite apart from being one of the first women members of Parliament. She had she had awfully interesting parties in her house in St. James's, and asked the young people, all sorts of young people. She always had... She had rather a variety of secretaries. And it just sort of happened, I suppose, that nearly all her secretaries were members of the junior council. For one reason or another, Amicia Carroll was, and several others. And, very often we got invitations to these parties doing, which was quite interesting, because, she had a sort of variety
you
of
met
people,
useful met
people
that
one wouldn't otherwise have met in that.
But
time.
Her connection with the LSWS wasn't all that strong,
was it? You couldn't say she played a part in
it
at all.
And yet she did show an interest in the junior council, especially, you think? I mean...
Well, I wouldn't say that she was, but, I mean, I think all young people, really, she was interested in and bringing them on, and I think she stimulated groups of people to...
That's interesting. I hadn't realised she'd
thought.
But
they may have had a political or something else motive,
You say, though, that it was just what you wanted and needed, or something like that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's just what, in a way, that one hadn't played... I mean, the only thing when people... A lot of my contemporaries went up to college and came down and couldn't get jobs. Rather the same now. Came into and then took up secretarial training, and they'd got a good educational background, but they were possibly for a time anyhow not doing a job that was fulfilling them in a sense. And they wanted to join together and find out what was happening, and an opportunity of sort of beginning to play a part in general life. And it's very much now, 50 years later, you've got a completely different strata of people who are just the same. I mean, the young people who join Women's Lib and these people, I mean, they must be the same. I mean, they're frustrated in some way or other, and they want sort of an outlet, and they want to participate in something. And of course, they've got a sort of radical sort of view that they want to put things right, and put things right in a hurry.
Yes. I mean, you did regard, I think you said, didn't you, earlier, that you did regard the people who were running the LSWS as a bit old hat or something like that. So you did see yourself in radical
in
a way.
Yes, I don't think we ever realised it. But I mean, I think they were the first to say, well, now we've got to galvanise the young people to get on. I mean, we're getting old, and we've got to pass on to them, and we want them to raise money, we want them to do all these things, and they've got the energy and the enterprise. And it's rather what the Fawcett Society's been doing in the last 3 or 4 years, trying to get the younger people in and interested. And we have tried to take less and less part, and we've come off the committees. And then at one time, and there were too many off, because they began to say, well, we really want somebody who will help us to do this. Mm. Mainly, I think, because they wanted people with more time, you see.
Yes.
Because they were busy and involved. Yes.
So, really, did the junior council spring to life in the evenings after working
hours?
Mm. Yeah.
But it was very lucky having this little restaurant, because one could go in there and have lunch and or sandwiches or anything like that. We had a little meeting place for them. But, no, I think it was the first getting together of educated people. I mean, now you've got the business and professional women's clubs, you've got the Sir Optimists, you've got the Corona, you've got the Inner Wheel, you've got all those have sprung up since. Quite apart from the developments, I mean, the women's institutes and that, but they were for a different type of person.
Yes, you were really, were you sort of professional class people on
yes,
the whole?
Yes,
I mean,
I was,
people
yes.
with university degrees
yes,
or
yes,
doing professional
yes,
things, right?
Yes, doing professional business. I mean, by the membership, I don't know, I've forgotten whether this puts what the jobs were. Oh, yes, it does.
Yes, actually it does, doesn't it? Yes.
You see, Miss Ethel Watts is the Chartered Accountant.
Yes.
And her sister, Gladys, looking at the bottom, at the end of the page, Gladys Watts is her sister, who's a journalist. Then her husband was a medical practitioner.
Yes.
Yes.
These annual reports I didn't realise existed. I must.
Yes, I don't know how many there are in existence. Actually, yes. I mean, you know, they must be in the archives somewhere.
Yes, I have to go to the portrait.
Well, they've gone
replaced,
now. You're a little bit in that.
I'm in limbo at the moment.
I'll
make a note of that.
It'll soon be.
Anyway, you can see all the professionals.
But you can see the different people.
Yes.
You see the principal of Southlands College, and then private secretary, commercial organiser. They were all done. Then my young husband, you might know Evelyn Young husband, she's a tutor, LSE, she's still alive.
So when you first joined, they were all in their 20s, were they, would you say? I mean, it was that sort of age group, wasn't
it? I should think they were all there. Enid Russell Smith, you know Dame Enid Russell Smith, she was there. I would think the junior council certainly were.
Mm.
I'm trying to think now whether we put any age limit. I think we tried to say that there would be, it ought to be, if,
Believe
no, this is junior council, does it, I didn't know what it says, the groups, you see a great many of the groups, the law group, the Marsham Street Player, the political group, or the 20s group. Now, it says here, at the last annual meeting, it was decided to attempt the formation of a student group. A subcommittee met and was appointed to deal with this proposal. Much discussion, it was agreed that a letter should be sent to all members of the junior council with the object of interesting the younger ones. So we must have been beginning to get
older
then.
Yes.
All arrangements to be left to those members of the junior council who were 28 or under.
Yes.
General invitation.
So gradually it aged, did it?
Yes.
I mean,
that's it, yes.
Yes. But you became secretary, didn't you, of the junior council?
Honorary secretary.
When did that happen then, Mrs. Halpin?
Well, I was there in 38, wasn't I? I don't know when
Yes,
it must. Was that 38? No, what was that? 34, was it?
It was 39. This 39 one.
39, that was.
Yes.
Well, 38, I think I was.
Yes.
One would have to look up the.
I mean,
I don't know whether.
You were the key person who was represented on the executive committee.
Yes, I was represented on there for a certain time. I don't know what we. How we elected them, whether the secretary came on, I can't just remember. I seem to have been on this.
And then, what do you have to do as secretary then? Presumably, you
rarely only one as honorary secretary. I mean, Mrs. Strachey used to do the office work, and I don't think we even did the minutes. I think what one did do. I think one looked after the membership, you know, first joining and everything like that. But we were very lucky because we didn't, you know, didn't have to. But then, you see, when Philippa Strachey later was honorary secretary, she did a lot of parliamentary work when it became merged.
Yes.
And there was a paid secretary, Mrs. Horton, of course, and she did. Now, you haven't said, have you met Mrs. Horton?
Yes, I have, yes. She's not very well now, she...
Did you go down to...
Yes, I did.
I haven't seen her just lately.
Yes, she's very prepared to talk, but I didn't want to go on too long with her.
No, she's had a slight stroke, and... But, I don't know how much she sort of remembers.
If you're sort of speaking in the committee, say, 1939 or so, who are the key personalities in the committee then, and how are they behaving? Did Ray Strachey have it in her hands?
She had it in her hands very much, yes.
Did she?
Mm. Yes.
Mm.
Just trying to see a debate, oh, that was a debating subcommittee, whether there was anything that would give a clue to it. Yeah, that's not really junior class. I didn't seem to say much of the, that was when, that was the sort of things that subscription.
So you carried on going, really from 1929 till Second World War, really, as a member of Junior Council? You carried on.
Yes, well, we merged. I was trying to think of the date when we merged. Have you discovered
that? Well,
you
merged, I think, about 1943 or so, I think.
Oh, as late as that, Junior Council,
yeah.
Right up to there. Mm.
Yeah.
Of course, when the, went up to 38, 39, and then, of course, the bombing.
Mm.
We had the bomb on Marsham Street, and then of course all the books and everything went to Oxford, and then back to Westminster. And we had an office in those buildings opposite Queen Anne's Chambers by there.
Another thing, which of course I haven't got in my mind's eye at all, is what Women's Service House was like and what was there. I mean. Can you sort of recreate it for me? Because nobody can now. I can't go there and have a look at it, you know.
No. Well, you can go to the Abbey Community Centre. Have you been there?
No.
Well, the Abbey Community Centre in Marsham Street, you see, and it's got a little archway when you go in.
Yes.
Now, the hall at the back there, I don't think was damaged. That was the hall that we built. That was the hall we built.
I see.
And there were three houses, you see, and they were rather old-fashioned houses. They had to be adapted. But they were made into, like this says here, for the convenience of house members, a suite of small bedrooms and two bathrooms is now ready for occupation at the Society's headquarters, 35 from Marsham Street.
Yes, yes.
And then lunch, tea and dinner are served at moderate prices in a small restaurant on the premises.
So you'd go in on the ground floor and you'd go through the houses into the hall at the back,
yes.
Then, would you?
Mm-hmm.
And the hall was
a meeting. There was a link up, of course. I don't know, because I haven't been to Abbey Community Centre lately. I don't know when they sort of rebuilt it or anything, what difference they made.
Yes.
But you went in and you had this house on. There was one house there and one house there, and then the hall was the back bit. You see the big bit of land that Miss Clegg bought for us. And that was the hall. And I would think that. Yeah, you could liken it to the first sort of thing. I mean, women's clubs weren't very, hadn't got very strong there. I mean, the Forum Club, I suppose, had started. And
well, there's the University Women's Club, isn't there?
University Women's Club, yes.
In a way,
had they been, what date was that started?
Well, it certainly had been started before then.
Yes,
I'm not
it
exactly
must have been
sure.
Started before, and had the Forum Club, because I belonged to the Forum Club very soon after that, or about that time.
Anyway, on the ground floor, then you'd have the hall, and then what was there in the
Well, there was around the side, there was this library, this room where you could sit, and library, and the offices. And then the restaurant was downstairs in the basement.
I see. And where did you meet then as junior council?
Well, we met in the hall for big affairs and meetings. Otherwise, we met in this. Sort of office, there was a room, you know, a committee room.
For you? I mean, for all the junior
councils? Well, no, not the junior councils, no, for anybody. Mm. No, we rather mixed, you see, we mixed together. We didn't segregate ourselves, except that we were really, I would think that you would say that we were the operationals then, and the other people were there to advise, and they would undertake, I mean, we would, if there was something we were worried in about, constitutionally, I mean, what was going on? Well, it may be abortion, or it may be birth control, or something that nowadays. But I mean, in those days, it was. We would sort of say, I think we ought to be doing something about it. None of us would really be experienced enough to know how to set about it. We would find some information. We'd get a lot of data and everything, but we would refer that to the executive committee of the society. You see. And they would say, oh yes, this is something that the society did. And then Philippa Strachey would take it on and draft something, or arrange for some of us to go with her on a deputation. And
So you could initiate
things. We were very much what I call the junior wing, but we would initiate things, and certain things we'd take through. But I think when it came to parliamentary things, we wouldn't regard ourselves unless we just went in support of Ray Strachey. Whereas nowadays, I mean, you've got a set of people who would want to go and be on it. But
yes, I
understand, we weren't used to public.
So as you were saying earlier, that in a way you've got the advantage of the framework already created for you to operate in.
Yes, we had.
And you can get that framework
moving if you want. There are certain things that they could say to us. Well, now you've got a group of younger people. At your next meeting, will you give this out, or will you distribute this, or will you get us the information that might be found?
Well, the interesting thing is, looking at the Women's Employment Federation, they say somewhere how useful the Junior Council is to the Women's Employment Federation, because they are themselves young professionals.
Yes.
And so whenever the Women's Employment Federation wants to find out something about a particular profession, it goes direct to the Junior Council.
And the Women's Employment Federation, you see, had a loan fund, a training fund too, which we also manipulated. And again, they could come and say, well, in this profession, I mean, is it right that we should be training somebody to do this, or lending the money to train for this?
Mm-hmm.
And they worked very much. You see, the Women's Employment Federation was derived from the advisory body, bureau, whatever you like to call it, that was set up by the Women's Service, and then they split off into something bigger.
Well, how far are jobs actually rather important in all this? I mean, how far are you getting to know where the opening up opportunities are in women's careers, really?
Do you mean now?
Through the Junior Council. I mean, is it a sort of exchange of information?
Yes, it must have been exchange of information. And this bureau, you see, it was supposed to be an advisory bureau, arising again from the war years, you see. I mean, it started when our whole function during the war was to find out where people were most needed and most wanted, and then immediately after the war, what they could do with themselves and where they could go.
Yes.
And people came to us and kept in touch with us. And then by the middle of the period between the wars, I suppose that was when 1934, wasn't it, with.
Yes, 1934
started, really.
Yes.
I mean, they it had grown to such a big thing.
Yes.
And that was when they set up as a separate unit.
But I wasn't so much meaning that as that would you, for instance, in your own life, or people like you, promote their own careers by joining the Junior Council, because there you'd meet other professional people and so
well,
on.
Well, without realizing it, I mean, subconsciously, probably that's what one would do.
Yes.
I mean, I belong to the Sroptimist movement, which is like Rotary, as you probably know, and there's one from each profession, and you get in each town, your club has the top doctor or dentist or whatever it is. And the appeal you make, I mean, I've done a certain amount of extension work, and I've been abroad, South Africa and Rhodesia, and places with new clubs starting. And, I mean, the appeal you make is that you don't want to be too absorbed in your own profession. You want to know what the others are doing. You don't want to... You have your own professional bodies, but you want to know what other people are doing, and other people can help you in your own profession very often.
Yes, and you think that really happened a bit with
Junior Council? I think undoubtedly. And one got... one certainly got an insight into other people's jobs and other people's ways of thinking and everything. You see, Miss Clinkard, she's alive now, but she was a civil servant, and you know, one got that aspect. Enid Russell Smith was very amusing, because she was a civil servant, and she, of course, we were beginning to work for equal pay, you know. I mean, equal pay was the one thing that hadn't been achieved. I mean, we got the vote, and we got a certain amount of education and entry into certain categories, but equal pay was the thing for many, many years. And Enid Russell Smith was a civil servant, and she was on our executive committee. And immediately she got into the strata that she hadn't got equal pay, of course, because there wasn't equal pay in the civil service. But she suddenly woke up one day to the fact that she was getting as much as men who had families to support and everything. And she then suddenly didn't believe in equal pay. And she relegated on us and resigned from the executive committee because she said she now didn't believe in the equal pay. Mm. And, you know, we went through all those sort of stages of mm. people.
Mm. Well, say Eleanor Rathbone used to argue like that too, didn't mm. she? She said that until you had family allowances, equal pay
yes.
would actually throw women out of work.
Yes.
So that's in a way one of its functions. Well, one thing that interests me a lot is you said that there was a sort of tradition handed down through the LSWS of non-militant pressure and so on. Was that quite a self-conscious thing? Did you feel that this was being handed down at the time, or was it just something you breathed
well,
in?
Well, I think that, if you know what I mean, there was no urge to be militant in those days. I mean, it isn't like today when everybody wants to put up placards and go in demonstrations. You did have demonstrations on the big things, like equal pay. I mean, we've over the years we arranged and joined in with demonstrations, but you didn't sort of demonstrate on anything or anything. I mean, you tried to improve it, and I would say that we never somebody say to us, "Oh, you mustn't do this, you mustn't do that." But there wasn't, you know, we were too gentle, ladylike, if you know what I mean.
Mm. The atmosphere.
The atmosphere was well, we must get, we must discuss this. We must get more opportunities for women. It was more opportunities in work. And I think there was a recognition in those days that you just had to change an attitude. And the more people showed what they could do and got the appointments, the first thing was to try and get more women councillors and mm. more women in Parliament. And, I mean, that's taken a very long time, really. Mm. I mean, we're still talking about the same problems. There was then, of course, it came that there was equal pay in the profession, I mean, in the professions, and then in the civil service, very much later. But
you didn't get any sort of preachments from Pippa saying that, you know, this is the way to do things, this is the way to get things done, or anything like that.
No, it was done much more gently or much consciously. I mean, we always went to Pippa, but so, you know, as somebody who would know how to do it and what to do. But I think, during that period that we're really talking about, we were much more what I call social than at all militant. I mean, there wasn't an awful lot of... it would be interesting to look at some of the minutes. Have you seen the minute book?
No, I haven't. It's in the Fawcett
It's
library,
in the Fawcett, yes, it's in the library. One really wants to look back on some of the minutes of the executive committee as to what sort of things... we really were doing. I mean, we had talks and we had a lot of dinners with all sorts of speakers. And then, of course, very soon, I mean, after this period, you come up to the 38 and 39 period when there was... I found the other day a fascinating letter. I wonder if I've got it here. From... what's his name? Oswald Mosley.
Oh, yes.
You know, he was starting the fascists.
Yes.
He wanted us to join up or do something
like
that. Oh, yes, he wanted. And he wrote a letter. Huh? He wanted all women's organizations to join him. And where I put it. And Pippa's letter and his reply. I wonder if I've got
it. Oh, do see if you can find that. I'd love to.
Corporations. Women would have the same rights and privileges as men within the corporation.
By Raven Thompson, Deputy Director of Policy, 1st of August 34. Yes.
This is nice.
Equal opportunities. A. In theory, women would be eligible for all posts within the fascist state, but in practice, a natural and inevitable differentiation of function would appear, women filling those posts for which they are best fitted.
I don't remember very much her actual addressing us, but it was a dinner given for her, and Florence Horsburgh, don't know what she was a minister of at that time, I suppose she was a minister of health, I don't know, anyhow, she was asked by the government to take the chair and to welcome her. And Frau Schulz-Klink, I remember so well, I was there at this dinner, and she said, explained to us how marvellous it was in Germany that all the women of Germany were united in one, whatever they called it, the Hitler's movement, one women's movement. They were all united behind Hitler, blah, blah, and what they were all doing and everything. And this must have been or 36 or 7. It was several years before the war broke out.